What's happening, COC? You doing all right today? We try to make the smoothest of transitions as possible in between the most incredible song right there at the end to the Family Circus bumper. Isn't that great? It's classic. You're like, oh, yeah, it's Jesus. Dun, 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 dun. Wow. That's awesome. If you're just joining us for the first time in a while, we started a new series last week called My Family Circus. And what we're doing in this particular series is we're talking about family. And we're trying to discover what Jesus thinks, what it takes to survive a family that's full of lions, clowns, and bearded ladies. My wife made sure that we put the bearded ladies in just so we could include everybody on that one. It's supposed to be funny, people. Come on, work with me now. Do I need to play the bumper again? Come on. So we really like to do this periodically, is take some moments to really focus in on some serious hot topics, and family, marriage, parenting is one of those ideas, and we want to make sure that we do our best to equip you with what the Bible says on some things that you just might not be able to find the answers to, or you're really struggling and you're at a loss of finding out what God wants or what he thinks about what's going on in your life. So that's what we do. And I want to remind you that we have all kinds of incredible resources for you when we talk about series like this. Right now, we've got a couple books for sale at our What's Next table. Boundaries with Kids. Anybody out there have trouble with your kids from time to time? Can I get an amen? Yeah, yeah. This, like right here, is awesome. Henry Cloud wrote a book for adults as well with boundaries. But this would be a great resource for you. Parenting isn't for cowards. Have you ever had that moment that you've thought, why in the world did we ever decide to have kids? Yes? Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. It's not for cowards. So James Dobson knows a few things about family. We've got those available for you at cost right outside at the What's Next table. I encourage you, wealth of knowledge, to grab one of those books and pick it up and be a part of that. Also, if you're not a part of a small group, DNA, is John out there? Sweet, I just called out our DNA small groups director, and he's not at church today. That's awesome. I want to push that on you as well and say try it out. I want to challenge you to be a part of a small group. Right now, we're doing simultaneous studies in several of our life groups that are talking about this, and they're going a little bit deeper with what we have a conversation with on Sunday morning. So sign up. Grab your program card right on the back. I don't think we had programs get passed out today yet. So they're coming. So maybe on your way out, grab one of those communication cards and fill that out and say, I'd like to be a part of that. It would be great for you. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to bring you up to speed a little bit. So if you weren't here last week, we left you with this particular idea. When it comes to family, there seems to be this tension that exists in everyone's family. And last week we said that tension was what we called the real versus the ideal. The real world versus the ideal world, and what you live in. So what that means is what's real is the fact that you may be going through a divorce. What's real is that is fact that you're in your second marriage and things aren't going so well in that marriage. What's real is that you're a newlywed and things aren't quite like they were when you were dating. Know what I'm saying? That's real, and it's not going so well. What's real is that you have children, and everything that you thought you knew about parenting isn't working. It's not going as it's planned. Maybe you have a prodigal son or a prodigal daughter. That's the real, and the problem is the real is nowhere even close to the ideal, and you're very, very much aware of it. You know it. And there's this tension. And because your real is not the ideal in which Jesus pointed to and said, this is the ideal, the perfect circus, then there's just this tension that is ongoing that you struggle with, and you're really, really agitated and frustrated with it. So what happens is, because there's this tension, we all live in a culture and a society that wants to get rid of all the tension all the time, so you don't have to feel pressured. So regardless of how dysfunctional your family is, there's just something in culture that keeps telling you, just chill out, relax a little bit, okay? It's all right. What you're going through is normal. So what happens is we constantly and continually change the rules in this tension area, so we call it normal and we become okay with normal. But Jesus didn't want you to be okay with normal. He wants you to live inside the tension and let him show up and show off and manifest himself through the ways of grace and do some amazing things. I mean, think about it, guys. We live in culture that normalizes everything. Just to give you a point in case, we do this so we don't feel bad about anything. We live in a culture that gives every kid a trophy. We play in sports now in youth leagues that we don't keep score. And some of us are out there and we're like, well, I like that kind of stuff. Well, that's because you've become okay and immune to what's not normal. I mean, I grew up, I don't know about you, but I won't get on a hobby horse here, but I grew up that if you lost, you lost. You kept score, right? And now, because we want to normalize everything, we put helmets on our kids and we move into gated communities. We've normalized everything, and we become okay with it because culture says this is what we want. And everybody wins at everything, and everybody gets a trophy. So our culture keeps communicating to all of us because we don't want anybody to feel bad. It always says this: it's okay. It's all right. Everybody wins. Everybody wins. You're real. You're normal. You're okay. But regardless of what culture says, every single person in this room knows and experiences this tension that's constantly there. Because whether you buy into the real or not, and what culture keeps saying, everybody, 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 when you think about your kids, you just take a minute, or you think about your grandkids, there's just something in all of us that has this feeling of, I just want more for my kids. I want better for them than I had myself. So you see this ongoing thing that is complicating a little bit of what I think Jesus was talking about. So we're forced with this tension between the real and the ideal. The ideal, which is men and women actually fall in love and they actually stay in love. The ideal that your kids actually one day want to come home after they've left the house. They want to come back and be around. You know what I mean? Just something inside of us that says no matter what culture is saying is okay, there's just got to be something more than what there is now. And then Jesus comes along. I love Jesus, because he's always constantly changing the rules. Jesus comes along and he makes it painfully clear that yes, there is a tension in between the real and the ideal. And when he shows up, he points to the ideal and he jacks it up so far beyond what any of us seem like we could ever do. And he says something like, hey, you think you knew what the ideal was? Well, let me just raise the standard just a little bit higher. But let me let you know that if you fail, here's what's something amazing. If you fail miserably at it, here's what's going to happen. There's forgiveness for you. There's grace for you every time that you fail. And it was like Jesus made this tension that we're so uncomfortable with, that we move back and we change the rules and we just call normal okay and we fall for what society thinks because we don't want to live with the tension. And Jesus comes along and makes this tension even more intense, right? And we said last week, that point that's amazing that you got to remember is this: Jesus always did something unique and unusual. He always taught and pointed to the ideal. He never stopped pointing to this is the standard. This is it. But Jesus did something amazing. He always, always, always refused to condemn anybody who fell short of the standard. Something like this. You thought it was this, but it actually was this. You heard this, but it actually is this. And he did this with everything, people, everything. He did it, not just family dynamics, he did it with everything. And when Jesus came along and he said, I know you may feel at times that this ideal, this standard may seem unattainable, but I want you to live with the tension. Stop falling back, changing the rules, calling it normal. This is not where you need to be. You need to be right here, smack dab, in the middle of the tension, and let me show up. Live with the tension. Live with the tension that your family will never probably be where it should be. Live with the tension that your kids may never be perfect. Live with the tension that every marriage may not actually work. Just don't ever lose sight. This is what's wrong. We've lost sight of the ideal. Just don't lose sight of the ideal. Constantly strive for it. Constantly pursue after it. Emphatically, emphatically go towards it. And never ever forget what my standard is. Live with the tension and always know that my grace will always be sufficient when you're in the tension. Live with the tension. But don't stop trying to figure it out yourself. Because the problem is when you figure it out, when you try to figure it out yourself, you're going to slip back to the real. And you're going to call it normal. And you're going to miss something. You're going to miss something significant. You're going to miss something huge. You're going to miss my grace showing up and showing off. And that's kind of the context of our whole series. But when we talk about Jesus and we talk about this ideal standard, you might be thinking, that's all cool, Josh. that's awesome. But here's the deal. Where I'm at right now, it's just too late for my family. My family is a mess. My marriage is this close to being over. And that's the tension. That's the tension we're talking about. And we get involved. And we mix it up. And we call it normal. And you're missing something. You're missing something completely. And if you're a Jesus follower, I'm sorry, folks. I wish I could stand up here and be more encouraging. But you don't have the choice in the matter. You have to live with the tension. You have to. Because you have to do it well enough that when those that are far from Jesus are looking at you, they can see you being okay with tension, not changing the rules and calling the real the normal, so you can keep pointing people to his grace. It's up to you, and you don't have a choice in the matter. You have to deal with it so people can see that even you have failures. But they can see God's grace in and through your failures. Now, if you remember, last week we said that the Old Testament in particular, there's really no good family examples, right? And you can look everywhere, but most of the mega narratives, they're just like, that's the ideal. No, it's not really good. And then the New Testament rolls along, and there's more or less these teachings, just a few, these teachings on some good family examples. And here they were. They were this: husbands, love your wives and always be considerate to them. That's the first one. The next one was this: wives, submit to your husbands. The next one was, children, obey your parents. Can I still get an amen on that one? Is that okay? Yeah, amen. Ugh, I like that one. Children, obey your parents. And the last one was, fathers, don't irritate your kids. Dad, stop irritating your kids. And when we looked at this and we said, this is the family ideal, this is the standard that Jesus said, we all fell very, very short. And we're like, yeah, trouble, 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 trouble with all of those. And we would all agree that when we first look at this list, that's pretty ideal because it's not happening or working in my family. And because we're all in real families and we probably change the rules in that tension, and we look at that list and think, fail, 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 here's what happens. We keep struggling with the ideal of what a good Christian family looks like. So we all do this. We all come to the point where we ask ourselves, what do we do? What do we do with this mess? What do we do with this? Do we keep normalizing? Or do we deal with the tension of the ideal? Do we deal with it? So for today, just for fun, or as Nacho Libre would say, geez for fun. I'd like to tackle what I think is probably what many of us think the most difficult one on that list is. Okay? This is interesting. Which one of these, just think to yourself, which one of these on that list is just absolutely ridiculous, the most politically incorrect, the one that you look at and you're like, I can't even believe that's in the Bible. Nobody likes this verse, especially women. Which one do you think? How'd you guys know? Seriously. How'd you know which one? All right. You exactly know. This is the one that's so challenging. Exactly. Wives, submit to your husband. So just for fun, we're going to take a look at this. This is crazy. Look at what it says. Wives, submit to your husbands. Now, let me tell you why this idea right here is so, so very important and huge. This idea, wives, submit to your husbands, is so important because this particular teaching to women in general was actually, this might blow your mind, was actually a specific teaching and application in Scripture that was actually given to everyone. To everyone. Here's exactly how Paul said it in Ephesians chapter 5, 22. He said, wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands as you do to the Lord. Now, ladies, let me stop here and talk to you for a minute, okay? You need to know this, that whenever I do marriage counseling, okay, I always make a point to highlight something that is very, very, very much worth noting. Here's what happens. Whenever a man or a husband comes into a marriage counseling session, they always go to this verse. They always, I mean, seriously, there's a tension, right? And we've normalized it. We're about ready to back out, but we'll try one last thing. We'll go to counseling. So here's what happens. This is the verse that all the guys point to, all the husbands point to, and are like, but Josh, seriously, tell me this. Is this like not one of the top, I mean, I don't even know why I wasn't in the, you know, top 10 commandments of the Lord here, but doesn't the Bible say this? Now, here's what my response is, ladies, every time, and it never changes in marriage counseling, because it always never fails. It always goes to this verse. They will always come to this verse and say, point right here. Doesn't the Bible say this? And here's how I respond. Here's how I respond every time, never changes. Exactly. This is what it is. But I need to ask you a question, husband. What's the first word in that verse? And the guy looks at it and he's hesitant a little bit. And then he's like, wives. And I say, that's right. Paul was talking to wives. He wasn't talking to husbands. And if you want to go there, let me show you some other verses where he's talking specifically to husbands. Because you got to know, there's a lot of stuff that you ought to be paying attention to and stop worrying about what he's talking to women about. You need to pay attention to what he says to you before you start going here and focusing on what Paul is saying to wives. Now, I don't know about you, but I think that's pretty good. What do you think, ladies? You with me on that one? Really? That's all I got? I thought it was good. Because I got your back, ladies. I got your back. You know what I'm saying? Now, let me tell you why this idea is so important. Here's what happened. If you remember in our last series, Christian, we talked about what does the word really mean, Christian, and how it what defines a real genuine disciple of Christ. We talked about this common theme throughout the series. Remember what it was? Great. I appreciate that. That's so awesome. What was the overlying theme of our Christian series? Love. Let me help you out. If not, you need to go listen to the series, people. Love. Love was just this common denominator that we talked throughout the series. You blew that, people, bad. Man, what am I doing up here every week? Come on. Love. Jesus said it over and over and over again. How you love, people will know. Love is a verb. It's an action of his followers. Every day, every moment, we are to always ask ourselves, what does love? You go, oh gosh, I'm giving you a check. I'm giving you a second chance. What does love? Okay, let's say it again, loud and proud. What does love? Very good. Some of you are like, I didn't make that serious. I just came back to church. All right. So when Peter and Paul come along to stay true to Jesus' teachings on love, they think to themselves, how do we apply Jesus' idea of love right here and help these New Testament churches, these new believers, these new followers of Jesus, how do we help them apply love to family dynamics? Which, remember, we've stated many times, it's never been done before. Those four ideas, they had never been tried or tested. So how do we do this? So Paul comes along and he says something like this. Wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands as you do to the Lord. Now, here's what's tricky, because we all jump on that verse and we're like, men, like,
good verse, yes. Feed me.
All right, you know. But here's what you got to get. That's verse 22. See, this is where we all go wrong, because we're like, I read my Bible. I read verse 22. But we left out what verse 21 says. And verse 21, Paul gives this overarching principle that we're all accountable to. So you see, verse 22, it's simply just one application to an overarching principle. And here's what verse 21 reads. It says, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Interesting that the word submit is in verse 21, just like it is in 22. But in 21, it's talking to all of us. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. In other words, it means this. All of you that call yourselves a Jesus follower, all of you church people, all of you people who are trying to figure out what this thing is, this tension in your family is all about, let me give you one big overarching principle. And then we'll break it down and I'll show you how to apply it. But here's where it starts. Everybody in your house is supposed to submit to everybody in the family. No amens? You're not convinced yet. So here's the big idea in essence. Mutual submission. Mutual submission. Paul says this. Everybody is to submit to everybody in the family. That's what Paul says with that verse. Everybody is supposed to submit to everybody. Now, then he breaks it down in verse 22. He goes there and he says, now, let me tell you how you're supposed to do that. Wives, this is what you're supposed to do. Because you struggle with this, wives. And husbands, this is what you're supposed to do because you struggle with this. Children, this is what you're supposed to do because you're always going to struggle with obeying your parents. And then dads, this is what you're supposed to do. And essentially, he lays it all out in verse 21, and then he applies it in the following verses. So verse 22, wives submit, it's simply an application to an overarching principle that says all of us are supposed to submit to one another. And then notice something else in that verse that's very huge that says, why do we do this? Out of reverence for Christ. In other words, you don't submit to each other out of reverence for each other. You submit and you do it to one another out of reverence for Jesus Christ. Because let's face it, sometimes it's not easy to submit to her. And sometimes it's not easy for her to submit to me because of who I am and because of who she is. Right? Easy, easy. Now, here's what's so powerful. I'm telling you, folks, this is life-changing. It's family-changing. If this could be central, just central to the thinking in your family, Paul says, this is what Christian families do. This is what they do. It's the driving force. It's the hallmark. And again, it's most likely going to be pretty ideal, right? Today when you go home and that teenage son says something, and you clinch, and you think you're a pastor, and several cops go to your church. You know, because this idea of mutual submission, it's pretty ideal. It's pretty ideal. But Paul says, if it could be the hallmark, that in the moment of that tension, before you start to redefine the rules and fall for normal, it should be about this. Mutual submission. Mutual submission, which basically means this, if you're struggling with this. Don't miss this. You might want to write this down. Basically means this. I'm going to leverage all of my power. I'm going to leverage all of my assets. How many of you are taking FPU because you have teenage kids and your assets are in trouble financially, right? I'm going to leverage all my assets. I'm going to leverage all my time for your benefit. That's basically what it means. Whether I'm the father, the mother, the sister, the brother, the aunt, the uncle, the grandma, the grandpa, the cousin, whatever it is. This is what it means in the family. I'm going to look for ways to get up under your burden for your sake out of reverence for Jesus Christ. Why? Because guess what Jesus did for you? Think about this. He got up under your burden, your sin, and he leveraged all of his power, all of his assets, all of his time, all of his resources for the sake of us. And when we say it like that, there's this sense that Jesus, part of the Godhead, he put us first, didn't he? And Paul introduces to family dynamics this powerful principle called mutual submission. See, I hope you're getting this. The message of mutual submission is this. I'm here for you. I'm here for you. I'm not here for me. I'm here for you. The message of mutual submission and family dynamics is this. Regardless of where you are in your family, father, mother, brother, sister, wherever you're at, I'm here to leverage who I am and what I have for your benefit. That's my sole existence. And it communicates this idea all the time in the family. Nobody in this family is more important than anyone else. Now, the thing that blows this idea up is something absolutely wonderful and incredible. It's a single question. And don't miss this. I told you last week that this week we would give you a question, the question that I believe could change the family dynamics, the face of your tension, remarkably. I promise you, if you just would try it a little more often, it could change the landscape of your family. It's actually the title. I gave it away, but here's what it is. Ready? What can I do to help? That's it. That is the question that could change the family landscape of your family. What can I do to help? Because it communicates this. How can I leverage who I am and what I have and what I have access to for your benefit? What can I do to help? Now, because I believe in group participation and I believe this actually does hold the power to change some tension in your family, let's practice it together. Okay? On the count of three, what can I do to help? Everybody, I want to hear it. One, two, three. Okay, not bad. Let's try it one more time, super loud, because some of us are like, oh, I don't like this. All right, listen, let's do it again. One, two, three, on the count of three. Ready? One, two, three. I think I heard some wives start answering that question right there. I think I did. Don't go there. I'm telling you, folks, this right here, it's a game changer. It is. It's an offer of all that I am to the question of what do you need. That's what it is. Now, kids, teenagers that are out there today, let me talk to you just for a minute. Okay? Your parents might just die on the spot from a heart attack if they heard this question from you. They literally might die. I'm serious. You want to freeze your parents and give them no chance for a comeback? Say this to them. What can I do to help? And here's what will happen. They will go into a comatose state with their eyes glazed. They won't know how to answer you. They won't know what to say. And since you said it, you did it. I did it because Pastor Josh said it. They won't answer you. They won't have an answer for you. You can go upstairs and play video games for all that matters. You're like, I did it. And you'll just leave them downstairs in a fetal position, just shaking. You want to really blow them away, kids, teenagers? Ask them this question with a room full of their friends. I'm serious. You got a big party over at your house coming together. He's like, hey, mom and dad. Hey, listen, I'm sorry to interrupt. I was going to go upstairs and hang out for a little bit, but before I do, I just wanted to ask, is there anything I can do to help? Can I clean up? Can I do anything? You want to talk about idol worship in that moment? Because your parents will become idols in the eyes of their friends. They will be like, did you just see that? How did you? Yoda, teach us, O wise one. Trust me. Parents out there, I know you're always about teaching. I am as well. We're all about instructing. You're always looking for that teachable moment. Here's what I challenge every parent today to do. At least one time a day, give your kids some time, some attention, and face-to-face, just say, hey, buddy, I'm just wondering, is there anything that I can do for you? Is there anything that I can help you with? Ask him this question. You know what this idea, this question does for parenting? Here's what it does, mom and dad. This keeps the conversation from always going toxic like you think it always does. It does. Ladies, wives, young, beautiful ladies out there that want to be a wife someday and get married. This is a powerful, powerful question to a man. It is. And you already know what his answer is going to be. Honey, is there anything I can do to help? Uh-uh. You already know what the answer is going to be. But it's still powerful. Hear it enough and it changes the landscape. You know what this says? It says this. It says, I am aware that you are carrying a very heavy burden of the responsibility and the pressure that you always feel. And I promise, honey, I'm not trying to interfere. I'm not. But is there anything that I can do to help? Is there anything that I can do to take off of you so that you can go do further and faster? Powerful. Powerful question to a man. Men, let's face it. You know what's crazy about this one? We're afraid of this question. We are. But you got to know something, guys. This is a powerful, powerful, powerful question. Here's why. In many of our homes, you're sort of like the leader. Right? You're supposed to have everything figured out, and if you don't, you're going to go research it and try to figure it out on your own. That's what your job is. But nonetheless, in spite of the fear in this question, it's powerful. So how about you? On your way out tomorrow morning, you look at your wife and you say, honey, before I leave today, is there anything that I can do to help? When I get home tonight after work, when I'm tired, grumpy, want to sit in my chair, feed me. Is there anything that I can do to help? Here's why this is huge, guys. Many of you are so fearful to ask. This is why it's huge. Many of your wives are so fearful to even ask for your help. They are, because before they even open their mouths to ask you, they just feel the resistance. And here's what you do if you ask the question first. You open the door and you say, I want you to know that I am here to leverage who I am and what I have for you. And I want you to know that I don't always expect you to leverage yours. That's what you do. What can I do to help? Let's practice it in. Let's practice it again. Count of three. You should be loud and proud at this point in time. And if you're not, and I see you out there mumbling, I'm calling you up on stage. I'm doing it. I'm doing it today. I'm doing it. On the count of three, what can I do to help? One, two, three. I'm glad you asked. We need some help with production and programming on Sunday. Oh, no. Stop. This, folks, this question is the bridge. It's the bridge to mutual submission. Now, let me talk to you for a few minutes here in closing the next 35 about the most common barrier that comes with this question. We kind of alluded to it with men, but it's not just the case with men. It's the case really with all involved. And this is what it is. It's fear. This right here, fear, is why we don't ask this question more often in our homes. We are afraid to ask it. I think maybe a little more with men, but naturally it is with everybody. It's with women. Kids are especially scared to ask this question because they know that if they ask this question, you'll be like, you know what? Yeah, you can go outside. You can pull those stinking weeds that I've been asking you to pull for the last 2 months. You're going to be cleaning the pool, taking out the trash. So all the kids, they're like, I ain't asking that question. We're afraid to ask this question, what can I do to help? Because here's why. We're afraid that somebody's going to take advantage of us. You know that once you ask this question, what can I do to help? Here's what's crazy. We're afraid because we know somebody might take us up on it. They might actually say, well, you know. And we know that when they take us up on the offer, then we're going to have to do something that we don't want to do. They're going to take us away from what we want to do and actually do what they want us to do. It's fear, folks. And all of a sudden, here's what happens. You're not first anymore. That's why Ephesians 5:21 is so important. Again, submit to one another. Why? Out of reverence for Christ. Because there's just this sense, that when God looked down at this big old messed up world and Jesus said, Dad, is there anything that I can do to help? And God said, Son, you don't even want to know. And Jesus said, no, really, Dad, seriously, is there anything that I can do to help? Well, son, there actually is something. And it's going to cost you your life. And Jesus said, I can do that. Son, you're going to have to go down and you're going to have to be number two, not number one. You're going to have to go down there and get behind every person in line. And Jesus still said, I'll do that. And Paul, a guy that witnessed the death of Jesus Christ on a cross, says, out of reverence for Jesus Christ, submit. out of reverence for Jesus Christ, submit. Throw up your potential of your time, your talents, and your treasures, and make it available. Make it available, accessible to somebody else. And guess what? Guess what? Yes, you may get taken advantage of. And yes, you may be number two. And yes, you may not get everything that you want to get done. But welcome, 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 my friend, to becoming a follower of Jesus. Welcome. Out of reverence and respect of what your Savior did for you, you get to do the same for the members of your family. And here's the good news, folks. Here's the good news in this. If you're looking for a silver lining, the good news is this. Like 99.9% of the time, it's not actually going to cost you your life, like it did Jesus. All it will cost you is a little bit of your time, a little bit of your energy, a little bit of your money, and sometimes a little bit of your sweat. Because you know, if you're anything like me, you hate putting together IKEA furniture. You do. And that's why, guys, that's why we fear this question. We're afraid somebody's going to take us up on it. But here's the deal, folks. You cannot miss this. You cannot miss this. The thing that this question threatens, it's actually the key to having a great family. And here's why this holds incredible potential. The family that's willing to ask this question of one another is the family that says this: I'm willing to leverage all of me for all of you so we can have a better us. And that, folks, that's a great family. Let's face it. You already know, when I say this out loud, you already know how you would feel if this question was asked more often and more common in your home. You know what this would do to your heart and soul. You know. It expresses love. It expresses care. It expresses genuine feeling towards you. You know what it would do for your soul. And here's what's crazy. You hold the same potential to do the same for somebody else. But the reason that we don't do this, here's the reason. I'm just going to call a spade today. You're selfish. I'm selfish. We're all selfish. This is why we don't do it. We're selfish. You're not willing to loan yourself fully to the equation. You will, and here's what happens when you don't. You will never be fully happy with your family. Because your whole approach to family so far has been this: if I could just get everybody to do what I think is right, we will be happy. And we all know that that light is extremely blinding. Cut it off. I'm sorry, it's way too bright. Please, cut it off. Cut it off. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Woo, I can't see anything. Where in the world am I at? If you could get everybody to do what you think is right, you'll all be happy. And we all know that this is not working really well in our homes. Here's what's happening. Yes, you'll be large and in charge, but you never, ever will be fully satisfied and happy. What happened, folks? I'll bet you it's not happening already. Because my Bible tells me happiness in the family is by way of mutual submission. The question, what can I do to help? It forces you to lean in rather than constantly pull away. And men, some of your wives, they cannot get you to lean in. They're afraid to ask you to do anything because they don't want to hear this, blah, 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 that they always hear. So they have no other choice but to continually do this in their lives. They continually orbit around your world, your big old self, and you don't have any time to do anything for anybody because you're just working, 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 and you're more important than them. And you won't lean in. So here's what happens. Happens all the time. They lean in, and they lean in until they finally fall over and fall apart. And you look at them and you say, what's wrong with you? And your kids do the same thing. Everybody tries to do everything to make you happy. But we already know, you don't get happy by controlling people, do you? You get happy, at least according to my Bible, you get happy by loaning yourself. Just like Jesus did for you. Get this, folks. The key to a great, great family is mutual submission. Let's all stand to our feet. Don't bow your heads. Don't close your eyes. Stretch. Nobody's leaving. I know that. Listen, because I want to deal with one last thing. I want to make sure I have your attention for this. Because here's where this big idea, this mutual submission idea, leads us to. Here's where it's at, and I don't want you to draw your own conclusions. I just want to help you today with this. I know what some people out there are thinking right now. I do, and it's probably more men. That's why I kind of closed with you at the end, and that's why I want to address this. But it's everybody, so it's probably more men. But this is what's probably being thought out there right now. Does this mean, Josh, that no one holds ultimate authority in the family? And here's the answer. Let me just clear it up for you. No, it has nothing to do with authority. It has everything to do with what you do with your authority. It has nothing to do with the decision-making process. It has everything to do with how you approach the decision-making process. You go about everything how then, Josh? Out of reverence to Christ. See, Jesus was the model behind this idea. At least the last time I checked, Jesus gave up ultimate authority because he gave up everything. He gave it all up. So if someone out there, if you're out there and you tend to believe and think that the dad is called to be the head of the house, you might be right. And here's what I want to say. Then this is what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to go about it, dads, the same way Jesus did, who, remember, gave up his life for the church. So men, if this idea is threatening to you, you got to know this. This has nothing to do with giving up your authority. It has everything to do with giving away the power that comes with your authority, just like Jesus did. Because Jesus said, not me, Jesus said, the more power you have, the better servant you should be. Now here's what I want to challenge you to do today, okay? If you're not a Christian, you're joining us today. You're a special guest of ours. Love having you here. But you're like, not sure about this Jesus thing just yet. Here's what I want to challenge you to do today. Thank you for being here. I'm going to challenge you. Give it a shot. I mean, feel free. Feel free. Take out all the Jesus stuff, okay? You can do that. Fine. All right? If you don't know Jesus, take out the Jesus stuff. That's fine. Just give it a try. That's fine. Wait a couple days so no one kind of suspects anything, like you went to church on Sunday, you know, and they're getting nervous about you. Just wait a couple days, but give it a shot. Give it a try. What can I do to help? And you still might say, but why, Josh? Why would I do that? Here's why. Because I'll bet you, something or the tone in your family, it might change. And if you're a Jesus follower, here's something you got to know today. Once again, I'm sorry, but you don't have a choice in the matter. You don't. Jesus said, you're supposed to do this, even if you don't want to. And you're like, but why, Josh, why? I'll give you the answer to your but why. Because it's what Jesus did for you. It's what he did for you. So here's what I want to challenge you to do today. Christian family, that's here today. After we pray and when we sing this next song, I want to personally invite you to bring your family down to the altars, right here up at the front. Bring your whole family that's here with you today, and I want to challenge you to pray together. Pray together that God would move your family, move you personally, individually, closer to mutual submission. Move each of you to continually start asking or trying to ask this question, what can I do to help? I just want to challenge you to do that today. And I'll bet you, if you lean in rather than pull away, things might just change. And you might just move closer and closer to the ideal and grow a little more comfortable with the tension as Jesus and his grace start showing up and showing off. And then you'll stop normalizing the real. That's what I'm gonna challenge you to do today. Pray for you and open up the altars. Jesus, thanks for today. I wanna pray that, God, you spoke to somebody today. And maybe, just maybe, they would move in this direction. I know it's personally changed my life. I've seen my wife speechless many times as I've been asking her, what can I do to help? And I know what it's doing. It's changing our family dynamic. Give some families some courage today to take a step in that direction. Come forward. Commit towards mutual submission in their homes. I'm praying, Jesus, the altars would be flooded because people are serious about this. Change what's real, grow comfortable with the tension, and move closer and closer to the idea. In your son's name.